Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
You're listening to the Red Sea Podcast.
Back to full. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champions.
Part of the Over the Monster Network.
Swinging a high deep drive to right field. That one's called to the right. Hunter on the move. Racing back. It's over his head. It's gone. It's into the bullpen.
Presented by SB Nation.
It hasn't happened at Fenway Park for 95 years. The Red Sox are world champions.
Hosted by Jake Devereaux.
Here comes a 1-2 pitch. Red Sox win the World Series.
And featuring Keaton DeRosier.
Strikeouts in 2017 for Chris Sale. An absolute strikeout machine. 13 tonight against the Baltimore Orioles.
They're all loaded. High fly ball. Deep into left center field.
Get out of
here. Way back it carries.
Get out of
here. That ball is gone. The Red Sox walk it off in style.
That's how it's done.
The X-Man strikes.
Fly ball to deep left center field. Devers has hit it out. The rookie takes Chapman the other way to tie the game.
Welcome back to Over the Monsters Red Seat episode number 146. I'm your host for today, Keaton DeRosier, because Jake is sick and has a massive fever, and we hope that he recovers soon, because that sucks. So joining me instead is Matt Collins. Matt, how are you?
I'm okay. Usually I would take this chance to kind of rag on Jake a little bit, but he is actually sick, so don't be too
late. Yeah. Pretty brutal stuff. It's actually kind of been a bit of a minute here since we've had like a legit episode. We had a couple emergency pods in between our last recording because the sign stealing thing broke and then the Red Sox let Cora go. So we're a bit back to our normal schedule here, where we'll be a little bit of that talk, because we've got a couple of things that have happened since then. The Red Sox front office gave a press conference, and the Red Sox had a winter weekend, which I'm sure was just a blast for those players. And there were some comments out that came out of that that are worth touching on. We had some Pedroia news break, and then we're constantly bombarded with Mookie news. So we'll have to touch on that stuff as well. And then we'll get into some a bit more fun stuff with relation to the roster, talking about some spring training invites and a little bit of the top prospect lists that all kind of came out rash the past couple of weeks and where the Red Sox fit around that. But first, let's hit on Mookie, which is just going to be a great topic. Over the past couple of days, a lot of reports have come out that the Red Sox and Padres have been deep in discussions for a Mookie Betts trade to send Mookie to San Diego with the, I don't know if I should say central piece or key piece, coming back to the Red Sox being Will Myers, and then some prospects, which now I can't remember who it was that broke it, so I apologize for not being able to give credit, but someone broke that the pieces were... ironically enough, Manny Margot and or Josh Naylor and Joey Lucchese or Cal Quantrill. Matt, I'll let you go first before I give my thoughts on it, but they're not going to be great. So
I feel like I'm losing my mind with all of this. Like, I don't understand. I just don't get it. Like, none of this makes sense. And we should note, nobody has said that anything is particularly close. It's kind of weird because the smoke certainly seems to be building, but every report is kind of hedged with some version of people involved say it's not close or it's not likely, but it just keeps getting more and more specific. So I don't know. Read into that what you will. The Dodgers also keep getting kind of thrown in tangentially in all of these reports too, so I don't know how serious their interest is, but they're still possibly a player. But as far as like the semi-concrete stuff that we know, you were talking about Myers and Margot and Naylor and Quantrill and Lucchese and a prospect, I think was the I don't understand how they're taking back Will Myers. I just don't get it. It's baffling to me. The whole point of this is to get below the luxury tax, and you're you're saving money on this, but you're taking back money for... he's a bad baseball player. Like, Will Myers is not good. At his absolute ceiling at this point in his career, he can be maybe average and probably below average because he's probably going to be playing in the outfield, and he's just not very good there. So I just... That doesn't make any sense. I keep the Twitter headline... which is more of a character thing. I don't think people are doing it as to be like deceiving, but it keeps saying like they'll get young major league players and a prospect or two. And it's like, that is so deceiving. Like, it's not like they're getting Fernando Tatis. It's not like they're getting like a Rafael Devers. Like, there's a wide range of young major league players they're getting. They're getting Manuel Margot, or reportedly maybe getting Manuel Margot, who is a worse version of Jackie Bradley Jr. People get very frustrated with Jackie Bradley Jr. Margot is him without those hot streaks.
Yep.
And then I kind of like the pitchers, Quantrill and Lucchese, but I mean, those guys aren't, like, they're not difference makers. They're guys you're not upset to have in your rotation. I think I might be higher on Quantrill than a lot of people. But I mean, they're still like, that's not, it's not a super exciting piece. It's just a young, controllable pitcher who you can throw in your rotation and be okay with it, but not like build your rotation around him. And then the prospects, they are supposedly not going to put in Mackenzie Gore, which I get. Patino, and was the other Abrams, right?
Yeah,
the other one. And I don't know, Taylor Trammell, I've heard some people say is, some people say isn't available. So I don't really know what's going on there. But they're going to get like somebody from the back half of their top 10 probably, which granted they have a very good farm system and it would probably be a top 100 guy, but it's going to be a guy in like the back half of the top 100. Like, what's his name? Campusano, I think, is the name that's been kind of thrown around the most. He's a catching prospect, and it's just, first of all, catching prospects are just not what you want to be the centerpiece of a deal for second best player in baseball. It's just like, I just don't get it. It's not a binary. You don't have to trade Mookie Betts. If this is the best offer you're getting, just don't trade the guy. It's so simple.
Yeah, I'm lockstep with everything that you just said. It doesn't save them. It saves them like $10 million, but they're still over the luxury tax, so it doesn't accomplish anything.
So, I should mention, I think it's 13-ish. It's either 13 or 14 if they pay for all of Will Myers, but it seems like the hang-up, the reports today at least are the hang-ups of how much of Will Myers' contract would be eaten by the Padres. Which, I mean, it's crazy that we're living in a world where the Red Sox are haggling money with the Padres, but that's where we are. But, so, I mean, it would probably be like 20-ish million, which isn't nothing, but it's still. And it's also, I mean, that money's on, it's not just this year. He's got one or two more years after this, I don't remember. It's just, it still doesn't make it any better, but it should be noted that that's part of it.
Yep. I really hate it. I'm actually with you on Cal Quantrill. I seem to be a bit higher on him over at TDG than my cohorts there. I was kind of touting him while he was going through his real hot streak last year. And then that culminated with I went on like a full-on, you should have this guy on your fantasy team because he's really good, even though he doesn't have the massive strikeout numbers. And then he imploded over his last like five starts, and his ERA went from like 2.5 to over 4.
I think I really liked him coming out of the draft, and I just haven't gotten off that, which is, might not be the greatest way to do things, but I'm not a national prospect evaluator, so I don't really care.
Yeah. I mean, he had the stuff coming out, so it's completely understandable.
Yeah,
but again, he's not a piece that you
like
want to
three. Like his ceiling's a number three.
Not somebody that you'd be super psyched to have coming in return as you lose Mookie Betts. He'd be a great piece. I'm sure there's lots of teams that would love to have him. However, if the cost is Mookie Betts, fuck no.
Yeah. I mean, if he's coming along with, like, I don't know, Abrams and Trammell or something like that, like, that would be a different viewpoint of Quantrill. In this case, he would argue that he's the top piece, either one or two, and it wouldn't be that close between, the gap wouldn't be that big. It's not what you want.
No. What have you heard? I actually haven't heard specific pieces in a while, which is sad that I have to say a while for the Dodgers. I know there was a lot of talk about their catching prospects as well back in like early December, but has any of that changed? Because I hadn't seen the most recent names, if any, had been named in connection with the Dodgers.
Yeah, so Spear did mention that yesterday, I think. I'm trying to pull that up, but the biggest difference between the Dodgers and the Padres, I think, right now, is that the Dodgers would take David Price along with it. They obviously have bigger wallets, but the prospect return wouldn't be that good because this is an another rabbit hole, but I mean, I think David Price has just become insanely underrated. His contract is treated like an albatross, which it isn't, but so let me see. I'm reading from Alex Spear's report, talking about David Price going along with it too. In such a scenario, the Dodgers could either part with a relatively young, inexpensive outfielder such as Alex Verdugo, or more expensive options, Jock Peterson and AJ Pollock, to receive greater prospect return. He says Gavin Lux and Dustin May would be off the table. The other guys in the top 100 are Kiebert Ruiz, who's a catcher, Tony Gonsolin, I don't know what his name, Gonsolin, I think. He's a pitcher. Josiah Gray is a pitcher. Jeter Downs is an infielder, and Diego Cartaya is another catcher. These guys are all in the bottom 20 of Baseball America's top 100. So, for perspective, I mean, and we'll talk about this a little bit later, but the Red Sox had two prospects in Baseball America's top 100, Tristan Casas and Bobby Dalbec, both of whom ranked above all five of those Dodgers prospects that were mentioned there. So just by Baseball America's list, they're not gospel or anything, but any prospect return would be the number three prospect in the Red Sox system, in a Red Sox system that is generally thought of to not be very good. So that would be the return for Mookie Betts and David Price.
Yeah, I hate that too.
Yeah, I like Verdugo, but I just can't. I don't like the idea of trading Mookie Betts. I definitely don't like him. I don't like taking a lesser return to get rid of David Price too. It just seems like a waste of, if you're dead set on trading someone like Mookie Betts, like the, it shouldn't be about money. It should be about getting an immense amount of talent back.
Yeah. So let me ask you a question, because there was a John Henry talked to Dan Shaughnessy on January 11th.
Oh God.
Yeah. I'm going to go there. And the quote from John Henry is, the focus on the CBT resides with the media far less than it does within the Red Sox. I think every team probably wants to reset at least once every 3 years. That's sort of been the history. But just this week, I reminded baseball ops that we're focused on competitiveness over the next 5 years above resetting. Do you buy that at all?
Okay, so there's many issues with this. I kind of struggling with where to start. First of all, this history that he's talking about. The luxury tax has not been around that long, and especially not the luxury tax that we know now. It's been around for like 4 years, maybe 5 years. So there is no history here. You can't, like, you. I know it was over email, so you can't. It can't be challenged. But I mean, that is just an absurd thing to say. And it's just, the whole thing is just insulting. He's the one who said it. The whole yep. thing started because he said it. We all heard him say it. To say it's a media narrative is just, it's asinine. And this whole thing about being competitive in 5 years, that's the excuse for getting under the luxury tax, is because it doesn't, but the penalties are being portrayed as they will hurt you down the road. And if you want sustainable success, everybody's favorite buzz phrase, you need to have a lower salary and stay below the luxury tax. So that's him saying that he wants to be competitive in 5 years. That's another way of saying that he wants to get under the luxury tax. It's just, the whole thing is like, it's just treating us like we're stupid. It's really insulting.
Yeah, I mean, the best way to be competitive over the next 5 years is definitely to trade your best player.
Yeah, it's crazy. It'll be justified as restocking the farm and getting rid of those penalties, and that helps sustainable success, and so that is staying competitive in 5 years. And it's like, it's just, and everybody buys it. It's the worst part. I mean, you talk about it on Twitter, at least half of my mentions, which I think skew pretty player-friendly and anti-owner, are still talking about the harsh luxury tax payments, which just aren't that harsh.
Yep. I saw that quote and just, I had the same immediate boiled over reaction that you did. And I was like, all of your actions actually kind of say the opposite. Like, even if you were entertaining the thought of trading Mookie Betts, you're not going to be competitive. And to the same extent with David Price, like, the best way for the Red Sox to be competitive is to have both of them on the roster. And because they don't have anybody, and if they end up, just for argument's sake, saying trading David Price instead of Mookie, but still landing like one of the pitchers for the Padres that we talked about, like, neither of them, Lucchese or Gontrell, are going to be able to fill that hole that David Price would leave, and the pitching staff would not be that great. It would be Chris Sale, inconsistent Eduardo Rodriguez, and then a bunch of shruggy guy. Yeah, that's not the way to be competitive at all.
No, I mean, if they were going to, like, the way to do this to be competitive would have been to do it early, so you had all offseason to kind of be creative. Because, I mean, amid all of this, I do think that Chaim Bloom knows what he's doing. I think he's good. I don't have any reason to believe he's not good at his job. I think he can be creative with sort of these budget restraints that don't need to be there but are. And so I think he could have probably figured something out to get a decent pitcher, maybe not David Price, but somebody relatively close that can keep them under the luxury tax and competitive at the same time. But I mean, at this point, it's just way too late. And I'm not saying he should have, like, rushed into anything, because you don't want to do that either, but it's just, they're in a terrible position. You're right. I mean, I think they can be competitive without David Price. They're obviously worse, and it won't be easy, but I think there is a path. But still, I mean, you're obviously hampering the team's chances. And like I was kind of alluding to earlier, it's just David Price just doesn't get the credit for being a key piece to this rotation. I think there's a pretty fair argument that he's that he could be the best pitcher on the staff this year.
Yeah, I think right now the division is, with a healthy roster for the Red Sox, going to be extremely tough. Mainly because the Yankees, they won.
The Yankees are the best team in baseball. Yeah, it's
100 games last year, and they didn't have Stanton or Gerrit Cole, which Stanton is now presumably going to be healthy for a year, and they have Gerrit Cole. So that just got way harder. So the best path that they have is to be competitive for a wild card spot, which the team as is, I think, is. And a team that can, I mean, it would be tough because you're right, the Yankees are just absolutely loaded. But it's a team with David Price and Mookie Betts, a healthy pitching rotation, that can compete for a World Series again. But if David Price isn't there, that makes things a lot harder, and especially if Mookie isn't there, that's going to make stuff even harder. So you can try and blame the media for this spin, but I mean, just the fact that you're entertaining taking calls on Mookie Betts and not just like, oh, the Padres inquired, nothing imminent. The fact that they're down the line where they know that the centerpiece, for lack of a better term, is Will Myers, and there's tertiary prospects and pieces, like they're discussing this a lot more than they would if they were really concerned about being competitive over resetting.
Oh, for sure. And I mean, it's not even just this recent stuff. I mean, it's what they've done all winter. They had clear holes at the beginning of the offseason with their fifth starter and second base, and they signed Jose Peraza and Martin Perez. That's not a team trying to be competitive. That's a team trying to save money.
Yep. All right. So now seems
I'm
like
all
a good
riled
time.
Up now.
I know. To transition to the front office press conference and some comments from players at the Fan Fest winter weekend thing. So I have a conspiracy theory around it. So obviously I was traveling and didn't have any of my pod stuff when this broke. So I wasn't part of your emergency pod where you guys got to talk about Cora being let go. But some things that were said by the front office during that press conference, coupled with some other reports and the words of Mr. J.D. Martinez himself, had led me to dig up a conspiracy theory about this whole scandal. So
I think I might know where you're going.
I'll start with the press conference because that came first. The front office was very deliberate in them wanting to make the point that they were letting Cora go because of what his role was with the Astros and their scandal, not having to do with anything that was reported to have been happened with the Red Sox. So that first was fishy to me. For them to really kind of, because there had been another report from Drelick and Rosenthal, same guys that broke the Astros, that the Red Sox themselves had their own scheme and they were running through all this, for them to specifically say, and it was also mentioned that Cora was the one that kind of masterminded the Red Sox one too, for them to go out of their way and say, forget what's happened with the Red Sox, we're just firing him for his role with the Astros. And they kept repeating over and over again, withhold judgment until the investigation is over. Then we fast forward a few days later to FanFest, and J.D. Martinez is talking to the media, and he kind of brings up the same stuff that they don't think, or wait until the end of the investigation and the results come out because they didn't do anything wrong. Everything's clean. They didn't steal signs. The series isn't tainted, any of that. And then there have been a couple of reports from a few different people that they don't think Major League Baseball has found anything with the Red Sox, which would be baffling considering the report that came out with the details and from folks that had already confirmed similar process of sign stealing at another club, and they had three witnesses. So my conspiracy theory is that Major League Baseball is working in conjunction with the front offices to minimize the damage of this whole catastrophe, because it is the whole steroid stuff kind of set the league back a little bit. It was frustrating. I mean, I think at this point we don't care much if people were taking steroids or not, but just the aftermath of it, all the accusations, had home run records tainted and all that, and it was league-wide. and it became a much bigger issue for Major League Baseball. I think Major League Baseball is basically trying to make the Astros the fall guy and say that these guys were the only ones doing it to just contain the fallout from what could be a massive scandal, and kind of said, if you guys cut Cora loose, we'll somehow not find anything on your end, and you guys are going to get off. That's my conspiracy theory.
I don't think I stand with you on it, but I'm intrigued. I don't think the league would do that. I don't think any other team would be okay with that. I can't imagine like the Yankees or the Dodgers going along with that. unless they were stealing signs too, and they don't want to get caught up in it too, I can see it. But unless that was the case, I just can't see them allowing that to happen. I thought you were going to say that Cora was going to come back in 2021. I thought that's where you're going, because I've heard people say that too, which I also don't think is going to happen. Yeah, I mean, I will say I was very surprised by the tone that they are taking about this investigation. How everybody seems to think it's nothing. Maybe it isn't anything. I can't believe it. I cannot imagine the backlash that the league will get if they don't do anything to the Red Sox here. So whether or not their investigation finds something, the public opinion has already been determined here. People will lose their minds. Astros fans will descend upon the league offices. Like, they are already melting down. If they don't do anything to the Red Sox here, they will lose their goddamn minds. So I'm not saying that it's wrong that the Red Sox aren't going to get anything here, because you're right, they don't seem very confident about that. It would just blow my mind, and I would be legitimately scared of what Astros fans would do.
Yeah, I just find it so difficult to believe that they're going to come up empty in this.
There's going to be something.
Yeah, I would be just absolutely shocked. And maybe I should have read into the J.D. Martinez words more specifically, because I think he said that the World Series, that's not tainted. And
yeah, so I think it'll come out that nothing happened in the playoffs.
Yeah, which doesn't make it right. It just means weren't cheating at the time. I mean, you cheated to get there, but you didn't cheat while you were there.
And nobody will believe that anyways. I mean, right. even if I don't even necessarily, I might believe it, doesn't really matter, it's just, that's not how this works. But I think what's going to happen, just based on their tone around everything, is that they're going to get punished, but it's going to be significantly less than what the Astros got. I wouldn't be surprised if it's one second round draft pick or something in a fine. Pulling that out of my ass, but it seems like they know they're not going to get crushed like the Astros were.
Well, if it's significantly less than what the Astros got, would that still blow your mind? Because they had already been caught with electronic sign stealing before, and Major League Baseball made a point that repeat offenders would get punished more and more severely.
No, because I think the Astros thing, everybody hates the Astros. Like, in baseball, the Astros are the least popular organization. Manfred mentioned in his report about the culture of the organization and how it was kind of a staple towards that culture. So I think that was
part of it too. That's true.
Red Sox, for all the issues the Red Sox may or may not have, I've never gotten the impression that people think of them like that. So I think that was part of the issue with the Astros. I mean, it was, this investigation started a week or two after the Taubman thing. So I mean, the Astros have just been garbage for a little while.
Yeah. And their whole,
again, I mean, I have no idea what's going to happen.
Yeah, their whole issue with the media, too.
That press conference was pretty probably wild, though. That they were just, Tom Warner and John Henry are just not made for that, man. They are
not good
in those situations. Tom Warner looked like, he looked like how I look if I go to, sometimes, if I have to go to a pharmacy or a walk-in clinic, sometimes I have to wait longer than I expect, and I just get really grumpy about it. And Tom Warner was giving me those vibes. during that whole press conference. He did not want to be there. And John Henry was like getting very annoyed with questions that were not all that annoying. And they kept saying, the thing that stood out to me is they kept saying that they were surprised that about Cora's involvement in the Astros report, and they kept saying they were surprised by all this, and it was just, I desperately wanted somebody to ask what specifically they were surprised by, because pretty much all of that was public knowledge at that point, and it was just baffling that they kept saying that to me, and nobody would quite push them. Yeah. I don't think they would have actually answered it, but I just wish somebody would have asked it.
The one thing that stuck out the most to me was when the question of whether or not Cora should get a second chance to manage was asked, and there was just a very long, long pause before Sam Kennedy gave a very political answer.
Yeah, I mean, Sam Kennedy, I'm not really into the whole, his whole, like, politician vibe, for lack of a better word, just, like, kind of not saying anything while saying stuff. It's just, nobody really likes that, but he's very good at that.
Yeah.
But, yeah, when that question was asked, Henry and Warner literally looked at each other, and then they both looked down. It was amazing TV.
Yeah, that one really stood out to me. Especially because, I mean, the entire time, and this was Sam Kennedy's response, was just to talk about how thankful they were, how good a job he did, and how talented he is, but wouldn't commit to, yeah, he should get a second chance or not.
Yeah, I didn't really have a problem with this answer specifically, just because I don't know what else he was supposed to say.
Yeah, I'm surprised that they were caught off guard by it.
Oh, yeah, that question should have seen that question coming a mile away.
Yeah. But, yeah, it didn't. They should have had a press conference after Dombrowski, but just knowing how they are with press conferences, it probably just would have been an absolute shit show, too. So,
I mean, I think the biggest takeaway here is that they need to start just sending out Sam Kennedy and Heim Bloom for the stuff, because they're just not. I mean, the whole thing that we were talking about before with Henry saying the luxury tax, that was clearly not something that he meant to say. And it's just hung over them the whole offseason. He is just not good if he has to kind of speak on his toes a little bit. And to be fair, if you're listening to this John Henry, which I know you're not, I'm not good at that either. So I'm not like trying to trash you or anything, but when you're the owner of the Red Sox and you're having these press conferences, if that's not something you're good at, I think maybe you should send Sam Kennedy out there, because he seems a little better at it.
Yeah, you have to have somebody who can do it, and then just rely on them.
Yeah.
Never say a word.
It's the challenge.
Well, actually, it's kind of a good way. We'll come back to the Pedroia thing, but it's a good segue into the latest on the managerial search, which is not a whole lot. We haven't really heard anything at all. And they might go into spring training without a manager at this point, but
so funny.
That would just be wild.
I don't even know if it would be bad, because I don't really know exactly what a manager does in spring training. But I'm fascinated to know what that would look like. It would just be so.
Yeah, weird. I mean, I can't imagine.
Like, this isn't football.
This has ever happened before.
No, and I mean, people have mentioned it. Like, they had a manager in 2003. When this ownership, or 2002, whenever this ownership group first came in, and they ended up hiring Grady Little towards the end of spring training. But I mean, they still had, I think it was still Joe Carrigan at that point. He was still there. Everybody knew that he was probably gone, but they were waiting for that sale to finalize, and it took a little longer, so it didn't finalize until during camp. So they sort of didn't have a manager at that point, but they technically had one, but everybody knew he was gone.
Yeah. One name that has been mentioned with the Red Sox and was mentioned with some of the other openings is it Hensley Mullins?
I should probably look that up, because I always feel bad when I mispronounce people's names. But yeah, I think it's Hensley. I can't even read the pronunciation guide. We'll call him Bam Bam. That's his nickname.
All right.
Yeah, I think he's the best candidate. And I will say that I won't really pretend that I know who is and is not a good candidate, but Bam Bam has been around for a long time. He speaks English and Spanish fluently, which was part of the reason why Alex Cora was so good at connecting players, I mean, that's a really underrated skill in today's league. He has managerial experience in the international circuits. He's coached for Team Netherlands for a few years. He's coached Bogaerts in the World Baseball Classic a couple times, so he has a relationship there, which is always a good thing, especially with Bogaerts kind of emerging as the number one leader in that clubhouse. That's a nice connection to have. And he spent most of his MLB coaching career learning under Bruce Bochy, and I don't know how many better mentors there would be over the last 20 years than Bochy.
Yeah, he was also mentioned in the last managerial search before the Red Sox hired Cora. So
I don't think they ended up
linked there before.
Yeah, I don't know if they ended up interviewing him, but he was mentioned. I was very surprised the Mets didn't hire him because he is the Mets bench coach right now.
Yeah, I was surprised too. Also surprising, at least to this point, apparently the Red Sox have not even asked for permission to interview Mielitz.
Anyone.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was talking about this with Jake like last week or something. I don't have any inside information here, but it seems like at least last week, pretty much every beat writer within like a 48-hour period had an article about the internal candidates. And stuff like that always kind of raises my eyebrows when everybody does something at the same time. So I kind of feel like they're going to go internal. I'm only basing that off that one fact, but that's kind of where I stand right now. I feel like they're kind of waiting for that investigation to end, and they're going to wait till Ron Renicki's name is cleared, and then they're going to hire him. That's why I kind of think they're saying that they're fine going into spring training without a manager, because they expect Renicki to come out clean, and then they can just hire him for a year and then figure it out next offseason.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Huh, yeah, that's an interesting approach to it. Probably better, I mean, I guess, the full slate of candidates that would have been available, obviously not at this point because they were all hired. So if you kind of go the bridge way and then you have your pick from the beginning of the offseason as folks are available next year and you can kind of do a much more thorough and proper search, that probably makes sense.
Yeah, and you know what your team, like, right now the next like few years or so in flux with the bet stuff and the price stuff, and you really have no idea what this team's gonna look like next year. I don't know how much that affects your who you're looking at as a manager, but I feel like it has to play some sort of role.
Yeah, I would agree. Beyond that, that's pretty much all I have.
Yeah, there's nothing. I said this on the last podcast, I think, but as long as it's not Buck Showalter, I really won't.
Yeah, I feel like
it's not going to be Buck Showalter.
Yeah, he did enough damage. They're blaming the Red Sox for getting his players sick and that whole debacle.
Yeah, that was so. I was just thinking about that the other day. He's the worst.
Yeah,
he's like every team gets sick. It's like the Red Sox like died. That I don't know what year that was. 2017, I think, but. Yeah, like their entire clubhouse was like out. Had like four guys put on the DL with like an actual flu, not a hangover flu. And he's like, "Yeah, every team gets sick." Like, get the fuck out of here, Buck Showalter. Not like this.
Yeah, not great. Also not great. Dustin Pedroia hit a major setback in his road to recovery, and his availability to be ready for opening day is now in major question mark. Is this ever going to happen?
I mean, it's hard to say yeah to that question, right? It's just, I wasn't super confident. Obviously, I don't think anybody was, but I was kind of hoping he would at least like get a chance at spring training to do something, and now it's like, I don't even know if that's going to happen. It's just, it sucks. I mean, this is not how it was supposed to go for Pedroia. I mean, the big question after this is announced was his Hall of Fame future status, which I don't really care that much about, and I know that debate's going to be tedious and just awful, but it's just, the point of that is just that it's being argued about with how, the way the last few years has gone, just goes to show what kind of track he was on. It's just the way this is all unfolded, it just sucks. And I mean, I've said it many times, and it really bothers me when people say like he has to hang it up, or like he's stealing from the Red Sox or whatever. It's just such a garbage opinion that it's not even worth really getting into, but it's just, I just hope he figures out what's best for him.
Yep, totally agree.
In the, I mean, people want him to be manager. I don't know that that's a good or a bad idea. Something I've been thinking about lately is announcing. I have no idea if he'd be interested in that, but I feel like Dustin Pedroia would be pretty good in the booth.
Yeah, I actually think he would too.
He's like, do you remember like early career Dustin Pedroia? He was a quote machine.
Yeah,
like, that guy talked more than anybody, and the Jeff Francis quote is like the best quote any athlete's had in the history of sports, and just, I want that guy. Like him and Eck in a booth, I think would be pretty incredible stuff.
That would be really entertaining. I mean, even at the end, he was still vocal and giving out sound bites. I think the one that sticks in mind recently was the I am the leader, I'm here, that's why I'm here one, which was frustrating at the time, just given the state of the team, but in really any other context would have been a pretty great quote. But
yeah, I mean, he's never going to be shy.
Yeah. Which is actually why I feel like he would hate managing, because I feel like in the same way that Kobe, RIP, would have been a terrible coach, because he would expect everybody to have the same level of grit and go at like 130% like him, he would get annoyed when people weren't. I feel like that would be a bad characteristic for a manager to have.
Yeah, I mean, it's said, I don't know how true this is, because I mean, there are obviously times where this isn't true, but I mean, pretty much across sports, I mean, people always say that the best players often make the worst coaches, just because they don't understand why people aren't as good as them, and that can be frustrating. So I don't know. I think Pedroia could be a good coach. I think he could be a bad coach too. I don't really know enough about any of these guys to say what they would be as managers, but if they gave him a shot as like a bench coach or whatever, I wouldn't hate it, and I wouldn't hate it if he went into the booth. And again, I have no idea if that's something he'd want to do, but I would be interested in it.
Yeah, I would definitely be interested in that too, for sure. Some other roster things, some spring training invites. You just want to run through the list or just talk about some that are interesting?
I'll just run through the list and then we can decide if there's anybody we're talking about. So they added 13 guys to their non-roster invitee list. They were all already with the system, so no new signings or anything, but Roldani Baldwin, Rusne Castillo, Jaron Duran, Chad De La Guerra, Marco Hernandez, Tommy Joseph, Josh Ockamy, Trevor Hildenberger, Tanner Houck, Brian Matta, Brian Johnson, Danny McGrath, and Bobby Pointer. Anybody there stand out to you as interesting?
Yeah, two of them. The first one is Rusne Castillo, because I just think it's kind of like a backhanded compliment. Like, you're not on the 40 man. We're not paying you $13 million bucks, but you can come hang out
and spring
training for a bit. Well, yeah. I mean, I guess against the, or is, yeah, that's still
against their tax.
Right. That's it. So there's no way they're going to call him up.
Yeah.
To play at all, because they're not going to put that against the cap. So, but you can come hang out with us in spring training for a couple weeks, which I just think is kind of funny.
I feel like you can't not invite him, especially because, I mean, this is his last year with the Red Sox, and so he's going to be looking for, obviously he's not getting a major league deal from anybody next year, but he's going to be looking for like a minor league deal and actually try and fight for a roster spot next year. So, I mean, I feel like it would be kind of a slap in the face to not at least let him play against some major league teams.
Yeah, that's probably fair. I thought, just seeing his name there, it felt laughable to me.
It's the last time it's going to happen. And I tweeted this the other day. His last season, the Red Sox, is the last season in Pawtucket. It's little poetic.
That's very fitting. Together, I think. I mean, I don't think he had a terrible year last year, but just his age at this point.
Oh, he's done.
Yeah,
that's tough. Really like. I struggle to say I feel bad for him, but I do feel bad for him, and I know he made a lot of money, and I'm not saying that he's like the unluckiest person on earth or anything, but I mean, right. The guy lived his whole life to be a professional baseball player, and he made all the money, but he never really got a chance to prove it, and I mean, that kind of sucks. I mean, he still lives in Boston. He's lived in Boston his entire career because he always genuinely believed he was going to get called up, and he wanted to be there when he gets called up, so he commutes to Pawtucket from Boston every day. I mean, it's just, I wish he could have gotten the chance. I don't necessarily think he would have been much of anything, but I mean, I think he could have been like a fourth outfielder and carved out like a 5-year career or something like that. And it's just, it's an interesting what if.
Yeah, I mean, especially the state of some of the Red Sox teams from his tenure, like it wouldn't hurt. I've said this on a previous, I don't remember when it was, but I remember I was of the opinion that they didn't give him enough of a chance his first go. I think it was only like 20 some games or whatever, just at the end of the season. And I thought he should have been given more of a chance. Jake was very heavily against that and not much of a fan of Castillo. But it is just kind of interesting to see how it's all culminating and coming to an end now. But
yeah, it's the end of an era.
Yeah. The other name that interests me was Jarren Duran. I know that he lit the world on fire and was leading all of the minor leagues in batting average in A-ball, and then came up to Double-A and hit a bit of a speed bump. Turned it around in the second half, had a pretty decent fall as well. So I still have hopes that Duran can be the speedy center fielder that hits for average that we hope he becomes and kind of jumped onto our radar on. So I'll actually be pretty interested to see how he does against the probably toughest competition that he will have faced to this point. I mean, I know spring training is generally a mixed bag, especially non-rosters, but yeah. I'm sure he'll have spots here and there where he'll be going against some guys that'll give him some tough stuff.
Yeah, I love Jarren Duran. He's probably my favorite prospect in the system, just in terms of like the way he plays. I like contact speed guys, so I'm excited about that. But yeah, I mean, I don't think he's going to be in the majors this year. I think the only way we see him in the majors this year is if they are in contention and he's like a pinch runner. But even that, since they don't have 40-man rosters in September anymore, that would be tougher. But yeah, I'm excited to see him. I don't know. I mean, nobody else is super, super interesting. Rodonnie Baldwin's interesting, not because of anything other than I just can't believe I saw his name on this list. Trevor Hildenberger is a guy I always liked in Minnesota. They signed him a few weeks ago. So I think out of everybody on this list, he probably has the best chance to make it. On opening day, it's probably either him or Marco Hernandez. But so yeah, I'm interested in Hildenberger. That's probably it. I mean, I'm interested in most of these guys, but I don't know that they're really worth talking about too much.
No, I think Donnie Baldwin is a great Boston name, though.
Roll Donnie Baldwin. That's worth.
What is it?
Roll Donnie Baldwin. ROL.
Wow, so, I think that makes it even better.
I think he's from the Dominican. Yeah, I had a big thing for Rodonnie Baldwin a few years ago. He had a monster season in 2017. He's a catcher. He was in Greenville in 2017. Just a monster season at the plate, hit for a ton of power. But since then, I have spoken to people who have seen him. His defense is not great, and he also hasn't really played a ton over the last 2 years. So, he might be like a backup catcher at some point, but I think he's there mostly because they just need catchers to catch all the pitchers because there's so many pitchers in spring training. You just literally need bodies. Yeah. So,
well, if there's one thing you want out of a catching prospect, it's bad defense. So
yeah, actually, this is something I'm writing about soon. That is not as much of a concern with prospects anymore because of the robo-umps.
Yeah, that's true.
Soon going to descend upon us, so some of that stuff doesn't matter anymore.
That will be a really fun transition.
I actually don't hate it, but I know a lot of people do.
Neither do I. I mean, we basically already have that as it is. And like, I mean, just the overlay, if there's a ball that's just outside or inside and people get pissed off about it, like, if they get the call, the strike call correct, would you still have a problem with it?
Yeah, the big argument against it is that the strike zone that they call and the strike zone that we see overlaid isn't the rulebook strike zone, and so the
right
we would see strikes that we don't normally see, but they could either A, change the rulebook strike zone, or B, I think major league hitters would adjust relatively quickly. They're major league hitters for a reason. I don't think it's as big of a concern as other people do.
I agree. I'm looking forward to it. I think it's going to be fun. Last thing before we get to questions, a bunch of top prospect lists came out. Just want to mention who and what fell where.
Yeah. Let me pull up. So Baseball America was released first, and I am vamping because I am trying to bring up where they fell. So they had two people on the list. I was a little surprised. I thought that they were only going to have one on pretty much every list. But they had Tristan Casas at number 70 and Bobby Dalbec at number 75. They are pretty high on Bobby Dalbec, which I get. If you're, you know, more into proximity than like star potential or anything like that, then I can see that. I probably wouldn't have him. He doesn't seem like a top 100 prospect to me, but I guess I can see the argument. Also, Baseball America included, so the way they do their top 100 list is their entire editorial staff puts together a top 150, and then they kind of put that together, make a list from there, and then start calling front offices and adjust from there. But they also, they published all of the prospects who are listed on at least one top 150 but weren't on the top 100. So Jaren Duran, Jay Groom, Brian Mata, and Gilberto Jimenez were all on somebody's top 150. So I thought that was worth noting. I don't really know. I mean, that's only one person, or it may only be one person for those guys, so it's not super important, but worth noting a little bit. And then MLB Pipeline, they had Tristan Casas at number 77. He was the only Red Sox prospect. They did have Bobby Dalbec as their number 7 third baseman. Casas was their number 3 first baseman. And then Baseball Prospectus came out on Monday, today when we're recording this, and they didn't have any Red Sox prospects in their top 101. They did have Casas in their kind of their next 10. Like, they put their next 10 guys who would have been on, so Casas was there. And they also said on their podcast that came out along with it, if they knew that Noah Song was pitching this year, he would be somewhere around number 80 on that list. So big takeaway is they don't really have any elite prospects. They might have one or two guys that might be top 100 worthy. I think the top of their system is all, like, the top three or four guys are probably all bunched up in like the 75 to 200 range, which isn't great, but I mean, it's not like a total disaster. So this is something that'll get people kind of worked up, but I don't really think it matters all that much.
Great.
Yeah.
I'm a little surprised too. I thought Red Sox would have one and just be Casas across the board.
Yeah, but I thought, I think Noah Song's interesting. I'm a little surprised that Dalbec made that list, but again, I see the case for it. I think I probably, if you had asked me if some, if you had told me somebody else would be on one of those lists, I probably would have said either Song or Mata, but I get it, I guess.
All right. Well, let's finish up with some questions then. Okay. Mike Mayer says, do you think Chaim Bloom regime just runs a tight ship and prevents information leaks, or do you think that they are not doing anything?
They're definitely doing stuff.
Yeah. I just don't think the stuff they're doing is worth talking about yet.
Yeah, I mean, I think he probably does run a relatively tight ship. I don't remember much. Maybe I'm wrong about this. I don't ever remember much leaking from Tampa Bay, and I still don't really. I feel like their trades sort of come out of nowhere. I think teams in general have got better at this stuff. So, I think they've been working on a lot more than we've heard. Like I said earlier, like, I don't think Bloom's bad at his job. I just think the way that they're running the offseason is shitty.
There's a police helicopter hovering over my apartment. Can you hear it?
No. What did you do?
I don't know, but I just saw the light go like down the alley.
So
shit, I think someone's like on the run around my apartment. Well, shit. All right. Well, let's make sure my door's locked. All right. Next question from Jeff Wax. Why can't Bloom speak candidly without constantly waffling? Is he? I'll be honest. I haven't. The only time that I really saw him talk was his intro presser and then the one where they fired Cora. And I didn't get that sense.
I think he handles himself pretty well. I mean, he's like another. He reminds me of like the Ben Charrington. Like he's one of the most boring people on earth, but that's not the worst thing in the world in this kind of job. I don't think he waffled at all, actually.
Yeah. Same. Ben Jacobson asked, what's the return for Mookie if he's traded? And how not with it is it? Also, why didn't they just go all in this year and then try to shed payroll next year with more guys would be leaving? Well, the second part is something I have been wondering this entire offseason. Like a two-step plan to reset, if that's really their goal, makes way more sense than trading Mookie Betts for a couple of stakes.
I can go on a rant here, but I won't.
Yeah.
I'll just say that is not how people in John Henry's position operate. It is short-term profits.
Yep. In return, we kind of talked at least in terms of Padres and Dodgers, so I don't really want to go any further than that. Spencer Madison says, you have the power to redo one Sox trade and signing of the – and signing. Ooh, I thought it was an or first time I read it. And signing of the past 10 years. What do you do and what do you do instead? Well, the signing has got to be Lester, right?
Probably. I think he can make past 10 years. Does Beltre make that cutoff?
I guess he would be right at the very beginning of it.
That was 2010, so I think that was technically still 10 years ago, just barely. So, I think I'll Beltre. But, I mean, I think Lester's right there, too. Especially, Lester was more, obviously he had a longer career here. It was more meaningful, sort of, to the Red Sox lore.
That one's fun to think about, though, because if they signed Lester, they don't sign David Price. And currently, Lester's at the point where he's kind of falling apart. David Price is still going strong.
Well, the Beltre one is they don't trade for
Steven Drew.
Dallas.
That's right.
Euculus would have been at first base.
Well, they quickly pulled the ripcord on Gonzalez shortly after.
So trade with that? I don't know what the trade would be.
Yeah, trade is tough. You go first, then. Give me a chance to think.
I would do the Thornburg trade just because I love Mauricio Dupont. I wanted back with Red Sox.
Oh, yeah. Very easy. And the fact that Travis Shaw can play second now?
I don't know. That seems to be a need. Second, but...
He's great. I specifically made the trip up to Milwaukee to get his mayor of Ding Dong City, Bobblehead. That was so worth it.
I'll allow it.
Yeah, I'm not entirely sure.
This depends on so many trades. It's kind of a hard question.
Yeah, I don't know if I can pin one down, but I guess the Thornburg one is probably one that comes to mind the most, I guess.
It's probably an obvious one that we're not thinking of, but I can't think of it.
Yeah, it's hard to do it on the spot. So I can't go, like, in terms of trades, I can't think further back than, like, a year.
Yeah. That's anything for me.
Sounds tough. But, all right, we got some legs out of that one. That was a fun one. Scott and Adele. So I haven't heard any JBJ rumors all winter. Have they decided to just keep him, or has the potential return just looked like, and then I believe it was a poop emoji?
I think it was toilet paper, actually.
Oh, yeah. Well, close enough, yeah. One, and they go hand in hand.
Yeah, but I don't think I've ever heard anybody say that looks like toilet paper. But, besides the point. Yeah, I mean, I think this kind of goes back to what we were talking about with the first question about they kind of keeping a tight ship. I'm assuming they've been talking about Bradley rumors. I assume they still are. I think if they really want to get under the luxury tax, that has always been one of the moves that made the most sense to that end. He wouldn't get them all the way there, but he is he's the worst player on the team making a significant chunk of money. So, yeah, I hope they don't trade him because I like him. I will say that Texas seems just too obvious for it not to happen at some point. They desperately need a center fielder, and they just lost out on Starling Marte today because he went to the Diamondbacks.
And Nick Castellanos, who they heavily ruined with, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would make a lot of sense. William McClassic. Or is that McIsaac? Is that an L or an I? That's an I.
I think it's
McIsaac. Yeah. With the addition of a few left-handed relievers this offseason, do the Red Sox have too many left-handed pitchers?
No. Most of their lefties are... I mean, the rotation... Do they have that many lefties in the bullpen?
I think they've added two this offseason, and they had one for most of the season, and then someone came up, so they had two.
So they, I mean, they have Taylor and Darwinson are two. Yeah,
that was it.
Like, sure bets. And then they have, yeah, they traded for Jeffrey Springs and Matt Hall, who are both lefties. But, I mean, those guys aren't really. And they claim Josh Ocean's. Those guys aren't really good, too. Like, those are up and down arms. Their rotation is very left-handed, but that's not a big deal either. Just get good pitchers. Doesn't matter what side they throw from.
Agreed. Figs. Nice.
Figs.
I'd like to start by saying I get the wariness of trading Mookie, but the line, try and win with him, doesn't really make sense to me. The Red Sox aren't trying to win with or without him, so at a certain point, the best move is to sell him. IDK if there's a question here. I disagree with that. I think with Mookie Betts and David Price, they are a World Series contending team.
Yeah, this line that they are... like no chance of competing or anything. It's just, I mean, I think this is where sort of the whole thing with Betts and all the disagreements kind of come to a head, and it's just a fundamental disagreement. I think it's crazy to think that they can't contend. I've pointed this out a few times on Twitter, and I will say that I don't agree with it like specifically, but Fangraphs, their depth chart projections have the Red Sox as the fourth best team in baseball behind the Yankees, Astros, and Dodgers. I don't know that I'd have them quite that high, and they're there by a fairly comfortable margin. I don't know that I'd have them quite that high, but like that just shows you like this is a team that should absolutely be. I think they're one of the two favorites for the AL Wild Card, even if you don't have them there. Like they're absolutely in the mix, and if you're, I mean, I know people say that the Wild Card doesn't matter or whatever, but A, I hate that mentality, and B, the Nationals just won a World Series. As they were the wild card, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's just... And the Yankees, I mean, obviously, I think the Yankees are the best team in baseball. I don't know that's particularly close, but they had a lot go right for them last year that may not again. And, I mean, we just saw the Red Sox go from having the best season in 20 years to being pretty disappointing. And also... that disappointing season, they won 84 games or whatever. They were still above 500 with everything going wrong. I don't understand that viewpoint that they can't contend.
Yeah, I agree. Things are getting more real here in Chicago. There are now people yelling out in the alley.
Jesus.
Yeah, this is quite a situation here. I'm going to turn my light off.
Oh, my gosh.
This podcast. This is the most real it has ever gotten in my residency here in Chicago, and I don't like the feeling. But Chicago's great. You should come visit. It's great in the summer. Good times. Come visit Chicago. Vinny Munoz says, Moreland, yes or no?
Do you answer this?
Sure. I mean, I wouldn't mind, given the state of the right side of the infield right now. Wouldn't mind having him back. As my personal opinion, in reality, the answer is probably no, because they're not going to want to spend money.
See, I think it might happen. I wouldn't mind it. I don't think he's going to cost anything. Like, I think he's going to take a go. I mean, I haven't heard one thing about which one this one. I think he's going to take like a 1-3 or 1-4 or something like that. And at that point, it's whatever. I mean, that's negligible. So, I wouldn't be surprised. The Red Sox love Mitch Moreland. Absolutely love him, and he loves Boston, so I wouldn't surprise me. I wouldn't mind it. I also wouldn't mind if he went somewhere else. I do like Mitch Moreland a lot, but also on the field, I don't know that it makes that much of a difference where it's worth getting worked up about.
Fenway Park suits him.
Yeah, yeah. Like I said, like I always enjoyed Mitch Moreland.
I'm going to jump down to Will Wickquist's question then, because that kind of falls in line there a little bit. With this roster, how do you see the right side of the infield shaping up? Seems to me Chavis and Peraza get first dibs. Lynn, Marco, Chatham, Rule 5 battling for second base leftovers. Folks like Joseph and Akemi getting early reps at first base with hopes that Talbot closes in the season here. That might also affect whether or not the Red Sox would bring Moreland back, how close they think Dahlbuck is, and if they think that, you know, not long into the season he'll be their solution at first, or if Chavis holds it down enough, then they can use those two internal options rather than, even if it ends up being 1 year, 1.5 for Moreland, they could go for $500,000 on their internal options.
Well, I think it would depend more on the role that Moreland wanted, because I could see them bringing in like a Moreland as just like a left-handed complement, not a straight platoon who would play against all the righties, but just a couple times a week against a tough righty, let Dahlbeck kind of ease his way into the majors. As far as the question goes, major disrespect for Jonathan Arauz. I think his name is Arauz, which makes me funny. But
yep.
Yeah, he called him Rule 5. Come on, man, he's a good name. Yeah, I mean, I think Chavis and Peraza are probably the two somewhat starters. I think Arauz has sort of a decent chance. I wrote about that today. I think he has a better chance than I initially thought of sticking on the roster. And I also think Bobby Dalbec has a decent chance of breaking camp with the team. I think the Red Sox like Bobby Dalbec a lot. And if he doesn't fall on his face in spring and they think he's ready, I wouldn't be surprised and kind of see Chavis roam around a little bit so you don't have to play Peraza so much. You get Dahlbeck at first and Chavis playing some at first, Chavis playing some at second, maybe playing some left field. So yeah, I wouldn't be totally surprised if Dahlbeck makes the team out of camp.
He had a great season at Pawtucket last year and I would love for him to just continue that with the Red Sox. So I hope that ends up being case.
I mean, if he can keep, he cut his strikeouts way down last year. If that's like real, Bobby Dalbec is legit. And I am not the highest on Bobby Dalbec, so I don't know how real it is, but I know people that do think it's real.
Yeah. It'd be great to add him to a lineup that also included Mookie, and they could score a whole bunch of runs.
Yeah, that'd be neat.
Linebacker 6 asks, any thoughts about Tech as the next manager? Who is the leading candidate? Oh, well, we kind of talked about leading candidates before, but we did not bring up Veritek at all. What do you think?
Yeah, I don't know. I wouldn't, like I said, sort of with Pedroia and really anybody but Buck Showalter, I wouldn't be upset. I sort of have to defer to the Red Sox judgment here because I don't really have any reason to believe he would be great at it, and I don't have any reason to believe that there's no way he could be bad at it. So if they think he's ready, I wouldn't hate it. Who doesn't love Veritek?
I would have one requirement for him as the manager. Instead, he would have to wear a little M on his chest, on his uniform.
All right, well, that was not my requirement, too. That was very funny to me. I don't want it.
Hector Los Misos de Siempre would like to know, which of the L.A. or San Diego would present the best offer for Mookie? That is actually an interesting question. I kind of like the pieces that, at least from what's been rumored, that LA has offered over San Diego. Not that I'd be real thrilled with either, but I think the Dodgers have more young major league ready talent, or better young major league ready talent than San Diego. So I would go with
that. Yeah. I think it's very close. I agree with you that I like the Dodgers players more, I think. But Price going along really hurts me. I really think that, like, I really don't want to see Price go. And I also, if Trammell is available, I do like Taylor Trammell a lot, and I would not be upset about that. He's also an extremely fun person. So
yeah,
I don't know. I think it's
fun in the Futures game when he was mic'd up.
Yeah, that was awesome. I think it's very close. The Will Myers factor kind of hanging over it all does not bode well in San Diego's favor, but yeah, I think it's. I could be convinced either way.
Louis Legstrong says, just for fun, what's your ranking of the least unlikely player managers for the 2020 Red Sox? Least unlikely?
So the most that's likely? That's got to be a mistake, right?
yeah,
I think he's asking the most unlikely.
Yeah. Least likely.
It's like an manager. SAT question.
Yeah. Well, the most likely would be JD Martinez. He'd be at the very bottom of the list.
You think he'd be the most likely?
Yeah. I mean, he's already basically a hitting coach.
I would go Bogarts.
As the most?
Most
Captain
likely,
X.
Yeah. He's like,
yeah, man,
that
least
reputation.
Likely
he's
is...
Like, he like brings everybody together. Everybody loves Bogarts.
I would feel like, I mean, I know he's the teammates love him. But I feel like it would be Farrell 2.0 with Price as the manager.
So you have him as least likely?
He would be the most annoying to me. So I don't know if that really fits in the ranking at all. But, Benintendi.
I mean, the least likely is, like, a Rouse or like one of the random relievers they just traded for. That's the answer. There's a boring answer, but that's the right answer. Of the regulars, it would be, I mean, it'd be Devers. He's a 13-year-old kid. You can't have that.
Yeah, that's true. It's like asking a toddler to drive a car.
Yeah, it's not good for anybody.
So there was that story from like a summer ago where a toddler hops in a car, drove like 5 miles to a gas station to get some candy, and then ended up doing donuts in the parking lot.
Did you see the dog? I think this is last. It was not too long ago. A dog in Florida got in a car and drove
was going around in circles.
Yeah, for like a couple hours. Fantastic.
Where are we? Spencer Madison. Wait, did we just do that one? Oh, no.
No, I think he had two questions.
That would make sense. Obvious questions. The hypothetical Mookie trade, San Diego sends Myers, blah, 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 blah. Thoughts. We did do that. Do you think they and Dodgers also raise their offer because of Marte trade? No. Do the Mets get involved? Probably not, but they should. Well, I mean, no, they shouldn't. The Red Sox should keep Mookie and they should shut all the shit down. But
yeah, I'm not going to try and predict what Mets are going to do. That's not something I'm very interested in.
Nancy Toothaker asks, are there any circumstances that would make you okay with a Mets trade? If they got Trout?
So, here's how this works. The only way you trade him is A, you know for a fact he doesn't want to resign. This is a thing that people love to say that we know for a fact. We absolutely do not. There's no reason. We don't have any reason to believe that, at least based on what we've heard publicly, that he doesn't want to come back to Boston. He just wants to make the most money, which is fine, and they can offer that. So if for some reason you know that there's absolutely no way he will resign no matter the price, he absolutely doesn't want to play in Boston, that is part A. Part B, you do not think that you are a playoff contender. I've already said that. I don't think that's a reasonable thing to think, but if for whatever reason the Red Sox think that, and you have to be blown away. You can't trade him for nothing. But yeah, I mean, well, I guess you don't have to be blown away. If you don't think he's resigning and you don't think you have any chance at the playoffs, or if you know he's not resigning and you don't think you have any chance at the playoffs, then I think it's reasonable to talk about trading it. But I don't think either of those things are true.
And then at that point, you're basically talking about the trade deadline because you have to see what the team can do with him. And if they're contending, then it's off the table. And if they're out of it, then you know, talk to him like, Boston, what's the deal? You like it? No?
Yeah. But I'm just saying, like, in this hypothetical, you know
this
stuff.
But I think that still falls into it's not going to happen now. And if that would happen, it would be more of a deadline deal.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing would be just you want to get it done because you have an offer and you're afraid it wouldn't be there at the deadline. But yeah, I mean, I think we've made pretty clear that we do not think that this is a reasonable thing to think anyways.
Yeah, agreed. And that wraps it up. So thanks for sticking with us. And I'm still alive, so that's a positive.
That's very good.
Yeah, and as long as I continue to stay alive, you can follow me on Twitter, at The Spoken Keats. And you can follow Matt, at Matt R.Y. Collins, or Over the Monster, at Over the Monster. You can check out all the awesome stuff that goes there. All right, let's do that. You can go with Over the Monster. Do that one. A lot of awesome stuff going out over at the site as well. Please check that out. Anything in particular you want to shout out?
Yeah, we are doing our, we just started our season preview series where we go through every player on the 40-man roster and pick one big question for them. So that's my favorite thing I do every year. So that just started on Monday. And we are also doing our community top prospect voting. So every Tuesday and Friday, we go one by one down the list and we all vote and pick the list one by one. So we just, when you're listening to this, number 4 will have been posted. So you can vote for number 5.
Great. Sounds good. And you can, assuming Jake survives his flu epidemic, you can follow him at DevJake.
He just DM'd me, so he's alive. At least he was a half hour ago.
Great. That is good news. All right. Thanks for hanging with us, and we'll check it out next time.